I can't believe that, you know, they're all compelled to serve in the military.
I know.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Good evening and welcome to Feed Your Head. I'm Ruth Anna Martefio, and I'm very happy to once more have with us as a guest, Michael Custer from an American Alarm Clock, blogspot.com. Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
I am great. How about you?
I'm doing well, enjoying the weather here in Nashville, Tennessee.
Ah, Nashville, Tennessee. I keep, you know, seeing it's like it pops up everywhere. I got some stuff from Reverb Nation today, and, you know, it's like five different groups. And guess what? Nashville. You know, they're almost all in Nashville or on their way or something. It's like, okay. Nashville is very lively, and it really got a lot of press, I think, at least from those of us who are more aware, maybe during Occupy. And I wanted to ask you something before we get into, we've got so many things, but I just wanted to ask, what came out of Occupy for you, the lessons that we have or should have learned? Because you were very active in Nashville.
I mean, there are a lot of lessons. I guess the first lesson is that divide and conquer is a tool that they use, and they will dress in the, you know, in the sheep's wool in order to infiltrate the flock.
Yeah.
But also, you know, here in Nashville or in Tennessee, we have a big, you know, Tea Party contingent, and the Libertarian contingent is very huge here. And also, you know, like Nashville's a fairly liberal town, so there are a bunch of very liberal-minded people. And one of the things that I think I took away from it is that it's good to band together to fight for common interests, but you have to be careful, really, in the long run, who you choose to ally yourself with, because, you know, especially for a liberal or a nonviolent faction, it's a very dangerous thing to ally yourself with people who are willing to embrace violence to achieve their ends.
Once
they get there, they're likely to decide they don't like you either.
Right. You know? Would you ever say, okay, for this, just say something local. There's something there that the powers that be are really doing against, I don't even have an example, but against the populace. And so would it be okay, do you think you'd be safe enough just to unite maybe with some of the conservatives if they, I mean, they think it's wrong too, you think it's wrong, and can we join together to overthrow this stupid law or to prevent them from passing it? So would you say that on some issues it would be okay as long as you're just doing this one issue with them?
Well, one of the things that attracted me to the Occupy movement was its willingness to embrace all people, not embrace any organizations, right? So if there's an issue
sponsored any organization, you didn't want some organizations to say, well, we sponsor, or you didn't want Occupy to say, well, so-and-so is with us.
Right. It's not Occupy and the Libertarians. It's these people going to their legislators.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that was a very brilliant strategy. You know, I think that's a, of course, you have to unite with anyone that's got your message, you know, on a specific issue. you know.
Right, right.
What you're talking about is the long term.
Right, the long term is maybe not a good thing. And you had talked to me briefly. You had given a couple examples of, like Libya and Ukraine now. How, you know, this is really messed up. Do you want to elaborate some on that? I mean, I know we're getting away from Occupy, but I mean, what happens when people join forces that maybe they shouldn't?
Well, first I would say it's not getting away from Occupy, as Occupy is a global call to occupy public spaces and citizens demand what they want. But, I think Egypt is the most glaring example of a revolution gone awry, you know. I mean, you had a lot of people that really believed that they could bring change, and they did bring change. But in order to do so, they had to ally themselves with people who ultimately were stronger than them, but who didn't share their vision. So the idea of a secular democracy that respected all humans' rights quickly fell to the side. And the end result now is that there are two different regimes fall, and now the military is in control and really doesn't care at all about
the military's in control. You're going to have issues there. Would you say about, and I mean, this does have to do with it because it's talking about aligning. And, you know, right now there's so many groups on the left and the far left and on that they're ego-driven.
You're breaking up a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. That there's these groups on the left and the far left, even though they profess to have basically the same interests, they seem so ego-driven, they refuse to work together. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
I've heard that from a lot of people.
Yeah, and,
go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And, again, I think a lot of that is, you know, my personal beliefs and based on the Occupy experience is that the powers that be are willing to spend years infiltrating and influencing people to not get along.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've built a whole global system on pitting people against each other. So, of course, the people that are most likely to unite and have some strength in the long term are going to be targets. And, you know, I don't think that one thing that really has been disturbing me a lot lately is the demonization of the word liberal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and attaching that word to people like Obama or the Clintons really does a disservice to the English language.
Yes.
You know, the word liberal has a very distinct meaning. It has a meaning, and that meaning doesn't embody the apparent views of Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or most Democrats, you know. And I think that the powers that be attaching that word to such conservatives as Obama and Hillary Clinton has really, it's a very clever tool that they've used to make sure that we can't all get along or attract the attention of the masses if we claim to be liberals.
Use that word. And another one that I personally, I don't like the word progressive anymore. I mean, only because of the way it's used. And that's bad that we can't use words so that they mean what they originally meant or what they're supposed to mean.
Right.
But yeah, to me, progressive liberal is pretty much center. If you're going to call Obama and, like you say, Hillary Clinton and all, because obviously they're conservative. They aren't even center. They're center. So,
center right, if anything, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't recall the last left person we had that was very prominent in government. Maybe Dennis Kucinich. Possibly Bernie Sanders. I'm sorry?
Yeah, I'm mixed on him. But I you know, you were talking about visions. So don't you think from the we you know when to compete?
You're breaking up again.
I'm sorry. I wonder what's okay now.
I'm trying very hard to hear.
Okay. I don't know what's happening. The way we teach children to compete in so many different areas, that this has something to do with dividing people?
Well, I don't know. I'm kind of torn on that. I think that competition is not a bad thing, you know. It's how we improve. But demonizing the losers is a bad thing.
Right. I mean, I think if you can see people be friendly, okay, you have a competition. But it seems like it would be better to teach people to compete with themselves, to become better at something. But if 12 and 16 maybe years are spent in teams divided and demonizing the losers, I mean, it's a thing. I think it's harder then for us to unite on issues as adults.
You used a very important word in that little part of the discussion there, and that is the word team. And so the idea with teams is that we learn to work together to accomplish this goal, be it advancing the football down the field and over the line, or you know, whatever it may be, making the sled go faster.
So there's some teamwork there, but we're still divided from the other teams.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, yeah. And I can see how that could be problematic. You know, I think that lines, I don't know how this correlates with teams and all, but lines like between nations different currencies even, those are like even bigger lines between nations, you know, the various currencies, they have to go away. It has to be changed.
Yes.
I saw something online the other day. The question was asked, with globalization being the monster that we're facing, shouldn't we demand a global minimum wage? And I think that's a great idea. But how do we do that if we've got 75 different currencies? You know?
Right.
Which is why they like to have different currencies. You know, the trading in currencies is a money-making scheme to begin with, you know. I know that this offends a lot of people, but I personally think that we need a one currency that has the same value. A gallon of milk should cost a dollar here, and it should cost a dollar there, and it should cost a dollar anywhere that a gallon of milk is available. So that big corporations can't say, well, the cost of living is so cheap over here that we can move our factories here and pay the workers less.
Yeah. What people, and even so, the workers are not getting enough money. Sure, people say, well, sweat. They get 3 cents per carriage they make. You know, so they don't pay that much for their food and on and on. But if we had one currency around the world, it would make quite a difference. And you know the nations are going to fight that bitter. They don't want that. The nations, the so-called nations, even though we may not be anymore, the haves won't go for that. It's against, you know.
Right. They don't want a leveling of the playing field. And they certainly don't want a leveling of the playing field by bringing those who are impoverished up. Because it takes away their ability to reap outrageous profits. If they can't cheat everywhere. And they cheat within
That's what they do.
They say the devil is in the detail.
But there's still risks around the world. There is oil or human labor. And we just had that, you know, a year now, the fire in Bangladesh killed over 1,000 people in the garment factory. And we've had some since then kill that many. But, you know, these people are locked in buildings. They can't get out. And,
I'm about to call you on the other line. I'm dialing right now.
Okay.
And hopefully this will fix the problem.
Okay, I will see it. Here.
I'm here.
Okay. Well, that's funny because I see the number changed. But yeah, you're okay. Does that sound better for you?
Actually, I'm still on the same phone.
Oh, well, the number has changed. Okay, let me just. Okay.
There we go.
Here we go. There.
Okay. End call. There we go. Still there? Awesome. Is that better?
I could always hear you.
It seems to be better here, so.
Okay, good. That's good. Oh, I heard that.
That's our basset hound.
Oh.
Flopping his ears. He thinks he can fly, but so far he hasn't got off the ground.
I had a basset hound once. Oh, my God. Lovable. And he never did get off the ground.
Lovable, but quite stinky, though, sometimes.
Yeah,
we call him stinky when he's not looking.
No wonder he wants to fly away from, you know, being called. I can't. I know you guys have plenty of critters around. I love it.
Yeah. So, back to the subject. One of the things that fascinated me with the Occupy movement was its call to not just occupy spaces here in this country, but around the world, and to unite as a single voice. A single voice of people who wanted to be represented by their prospective governments. And the idea of calling for a global minimum wage and global workers' rights, I think, is the only way that we're going to ever begin to really put in check those capitalist powers that have really taken over every government in the world. And then we come back to the be careful with whom we ally ourselves.
Change bed partners phrase. And these are not necessarily our friends. I can say that. Well, my enemy's enemy is my friend. Well, maybe, you know, they've done something that you approve of, but that doesn't mean that they're with you on the long haul. And that's what you're saying.
Right. It's like I may vote for a Democrat, though I know that the Democrat does not really have my interests in mind all the time, you know. I think.
But you will think the Democrats.
Well, I mean, here in the South, hell yeah. you know,
because
the I'm sorry?
No, that's what I mean. A lot of people do the, you know, voting for the lesser of the evils.
Yeah.
Which is too bad.
I mean,
that, you know, you can't vote for somebody instead of voting against somebody else.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because like here, the alternative is really scary. I mean, if you saw the things that were going through our Tennessee state legislature, and they're going through with little to no public knowledge, even.
Right,
I mean, because half of the country, half of the state here agrees with those people. But like everything they're doing in Wisconsin, they have already done here, and no one stood up. No one spoke against it. I mean, most of the time people didn't even know until after it happened, you know. Oh, there's a new law on the books.
Yeah.
Then it's almost too late.
I don't know if Tennessee is doing this, but I've read several states. I mean, it's very troubling to me what they're doing with the schools. They're trying to demonize science and, you know, just really take out curriculum or at least anything to do with religion or take anything to do with, like, religious studies. People actually know there's some religion besides the Christian one. They're really, really just censoring the things that the children are learning.
Yeah. Last year here, they passed a law making it legal for teachers to teach creationism as science.
Well, so that just opens up anything.
Now, that doesn't mean that all teachers are, but if a teacher chooses to, they can't be punished for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And it's very disturbing.
It is very disturbing.
Now, what I would like to see... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, when you think that at one time, well, supposedly, unless that was what they told us, this country was really big in the field of different sciences. And now, they're trying to do away with it, change it. I mean, I would say we've really...
Yeah. I mean, remember now, Tennessee was the place where the Monkey Scopes trial happened.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Yes. So it's a weird state because it goes back and forth. But right now it's bending towards the other side. One thing I would like to see is, since they can't seem to get religion out of schools, how about just being all-inclusive? I would like to see, for instance, from grades 1 through 12, every child spend some time in a class that teaches about religion. All religions.
Right. Well,
every single one.
And you have a rabbi come in. You have a Christian minister. You have a Christian man. You have all different, you can have a yogi.
Bring some pagans in.
Pardon?
Bring some pagans in.
Definitely, Brian. Yeah. Just
some Native Americans, some Hindus.
Right.
Yeah. And
you've got we have the plenty of Muslim, what do I say, an Iman? You know, just a lot of different people from different religions are, I mean, well, just in the pagans themselves, they could take a year because there's so many subcategories and all. But yeah, people are well rounded, which is what I always do, so their kids actually have something to choose from.
So that it demystifies the other religions.
Exactly.
You know, so that...
Yeah, when you know what they're about.
Right.
Also, I mean, then people can see the commonality, the core. The core is compassion and love. If you know the religions, you're going to...
right.
They have messed up, basically. I mean, and changed things to their purpose.
You still there?
And for people.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're really breaking up, but I'm trying.
Wow. I mean, there's no noise here. Even my neighbor's dog is barking.
I'm wondering if it's noise here, if it's doing it. I don't really hear a bunch of noise.
Yeah,
but you were speaking of the
really
commonality. Yeah, you were speaking of the commonalities between the religions, right?
Right. The core. When you get down to it, it's love and compassion. And all that other is just added by humans, of course. I mean, religions are started by humans and added to by humans. For purposes, though.
Right. And I think most of those stories that were meant as examples of how we should not be.
A lot, yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, so, and I don't know.
Well, some of them have different ways of telling the stories, but I know there's some very biting stories in, like, Buddhism to explain a point. And, you know, they get right to it. And, you know, some beat around the bush a little bit more, and sometimes the Buddhists. But you can, you know, okay, it's not just this story that so-and-so did this, but just as in fairy tales, there's a point to them. And a lot
right.
of fairy tales were originally for adults. And
I remember as a child my parents reading Aesop's Fables to me. Which is kind of a similar thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that this is in, and it comes from the story to prove points, and it's great, you know. So I don't know, but I love your idea of just having all these different people come in and talk to kids as they're growing up, so that they more mystery to it.
Yeah, I think even, like, actually teach them the various books, you know. When they finish, they should know what the Quran says, and what the Bible says, and what the Torah says, and Buddhist texts, whatever they might be, and Hindu texts.
Yeah, all of those. And, you know, and even probably, well, as important as what they say, then they know what they don't say.
Right.
I think that's correct. Absolutely not. I've read it. Don't say that. You know, have you read it?
Yeah.
Well, someone said it. It's like, you know, read it yourself.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know,
I
mean, ultimately, all of those texts really are just philosophy.
Yes. Yeah.
They're stories to give us ideas to think about.
No. Right, and they do. I mean, if you, with that in mind, and take everything literally, and, you know, you can get very confused if you take it literally. I mean, very confused. But, no, I think that the education system, I don't know, Michael. When I was in school, I think it was probably pretty good for what it was. Now I find out that the history I learned was not necessarily true, but my instructors did it because it was what they'd been taught.
Right.
You know,
right.
So, but now many things have changed, and the schools, because of finances, they're trying to take out the arts and music and different things. Music isn't possible. So I have no finance now. And schools are getting harder on children. They aren't learning. They're not learning. They don't want something. They can't test.
I believe part of it has to do with, you know, they're attempting to destroy public education altogether so that they can privatize. And once privatized, they can teach various neighborhoods what they want the various neighborhoods to learn, right? So schools that would be in lower economic neighborhoods, they would be teaching how to be good servants. Where schools
yes.
in more intellectual neighborhoods, they would be teaching how to be good. Did I say intellectual? That was a bad choice of words. In more affluent neighborhoods, they would be teaching
Absolutely.
People how to be good predators.
Exactly. How to be CEOs of a company that walks all over the others. Yes. So,
yeah
the privatization is really appalling, as the privatization of prisons. And I did just see that a couple companies had pulled out. It was measly $60 million. Okay, I see measly because to me that would be grand. But $60 million in this context is measly. However, seemed like at the beginning they were pulling from privatized. They didn't have any longer in the CCA.
Yeah.
And different cities own prison. So I thought that was a good beginning anyway. When we have all these things privatized, when you know they used to do their own baking, their own laundry, now it's all brought.
Yeah. One of the reasons that they're doing that is, there's no more manufacturing here. So
yeah.
that means that all those jobs that were here, we have to find things for those people to do. And one of the ways we put them to work is by bolstering the insurance companies, right? companies really don't provide any real service. They don't make the medicine. They don't, sweep the floors at the hospital or administer the medicine. They just shuffle paper.
Right.
But then also, prisons. A lot of these prisons have been turned into factories where the prisoners are allowed to work for pennies on the dollar, and they make high-end furniture, which is then sold to government office buildings.
Doing customer service for some companies.
Yes, and also laundry service is another big one lately that.
Okay.
They used to do their own laundry anyway, right? Now they just
right.
throw in
well,
a bunch of
it. Right, they used to do their own.
Money.
And then there was all this time when the laundry was being sent out and brought back. I'm
right.
saying the some of them are doing it, it's being brought in, they do it, and it's sent out. So, they're making, pennies on the dollar. I mean, it's car and cigarette. It takes a lot to save up to do it much else with it. A friend of mine is in prison, and they're not really cell phones, and so it's expensive to get a cell phone because you have to pay off the guards.
Right.
But
right.
Can be done, and so you get money from outside because your family can save money and all. But I mean, all of these things that you do to work, things you can spend the money on. But like you said, really pennies on the dollar. It would be considered slave labor.
It is considered slave. It is slave labor. I mean, it is outright slave labor. And really, the practice of slavery never died here. Immediately following the outlawing of slavery, we started seeing a lot of African Americans locked up in prisons where they would be forced to labor on the local farms and build the local roads. Slavery never ended here.
All of that. Yeah, it's always good. And we even have it in, outside of prison. There's a town now when a lot of people gather for their donuts and coffee. And there are several women from India that work there. I just recently found out there. Has brought them over. He's put them in some apartment with no furniture bare, basically. And is not really in even like minimum wage, because they're having to pay him for their passage over.
Right.
And I think that I was surprised to hear that that was nearby, but it's somebody who actually goes there and does know. But we hear about a lot of that kind of thing in the bigger cities.
Yeah.
It's actually an illegal thing
to do.
To
bring people in and hold them like that. But
mm-hmm.
for a lot of people, it's the only way to get here.
Right.
So
yeah.
I can see how somebody who has hopes of bringing their family or their friends
sure.
over would be really loath to turn those people in, you know?
Exactly. That's it, because you feel you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. The people, they call them coyotes, that bring Mexicans over to
yeah.
this country. I mean, and it's horrible. The prices they charge and the way they transport them when
yeah.
they get the fare, so they owe them all this money, and they actually sell them, you know, to like somebody who has a factory or something. They pay the
yeah.
coyote X number of, you know, X amount of money per person. So
bring that cheap labor, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a terrible thing. And it's really a global phenomenon. I mean, this is happening in Europe too. So there we come back to the notion that there really needs to be a global minimum wage, you know, and
mm-hmm.
a global currency that has the same value everywhere. I think that's the only way we're going to defeat these things. I mean, and the big worry is not whether or not we're going to have a global government, because we are going to have one. The worry is whether it will be one that's imposed on to the corporations or imposed on us by the corporations.
That's the thing, because to an extent we already have it.
Yeah.
And
right.
The corporations own the government, and so yeah, I agree. It's going to happen, but we still have the choice. We can still make it work for us. Us being people.
But it's going to take uniting. It's not groups uniting with groups, but people uniting around an idea, you
mm-hmm.
know. I might like a lot of things the NAACP does. Hell, I might like almost everything that they do. But honestly, I doubt if they have my best interests at heart. And perhaps they shouldn't. I'm a white male, you know. So we shouldn't be trying to unite groups that have singular interests, but we should, as people, all be uniting around ideals that we all hold in common.
Right.
Like fair pay for fair work, like fair cost for housing, you know, like energy not being so expensive and so deadly, you know, food being healthy and available, you know. The only people that don't support those ideas are people that are profiting on inequality. And
but whether it's from people being sick, you know, like Big Farm, or the corporations that are snatching up the land for whatever they want, you know, they
right.
Your regular people who actually know what it's like to work and worry about families. have a comment if they only knew to get past the division. Very true, though. There's a lot of organizations that we might feel a lot of empathy toward. They, yeah, right on for them, but we are not their first concern.
Right.
So it behooves us to actually, you know, go for these like umbrella topics, subjects that we all can unite on and fight for.
And I think that was the purpose of Occupy, is to provide a venue for uniting around some fairly specific ideals that were all, every last one of them, very progressive. I mean, if you look at the declaration that came out of Occupy Wall Street, so which, again, is a big part of what attracted me to that whole group there.
Let me ask you, like, at a personal level, have you made and stayed in contact with people from some of the Occupy movements, not just in this country, but in other parts of the world?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I haven't really formed solid relationships with them, but I keep listening to the ideals that they're putting out there and putting out the ideals that I have, sharing my thoughts. And trying to continuously advocate the idea of a global movement, you know, a global movement, you know. So, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
I think, so that's one of the great things that came out of Occupy. You know, you're here in Tennessee, and then somebody in Egypt, and you have, it's sort of like you were saying, you know, they may be pushing, fighting the Muslim Brotherhood or fighting for the Muslim Brotherhood or this or that. Mm-hmm. It might be different than what you're fighting in Tennessee. But the overall, you still have the overall and dreams that unite us all.
Yeah. In other words, the enemy may have different clothing in different areas, may have different disguises. But it all does still come down to the same enemy. And they use our differences to keep us segregated.
Oh, right. I mean, whether it's gender, religion, culture, I mean, they're always the, just in the army, the services before, you know, part of the whole, what do you call the, oh, like boot camp and everything, you start calling your perceived enemy name, right? You know, they're lower, they're subhuman, and that's how you get people to go kill them. But you that's part of the division. I mean, there it is. It's work divisions. You know, well, somebody is a sanitation worker, so they're lower. The person who is running a chain of stores.
Yeah, they're lower until the trash doesn't get taken out.
Exactly, they might be valued a bit, but that and people talk about class. I mean, I've heard that, you know, well, the United States doesn't have the class problem, and that is such a crock.
Yeah, it is.
It is. I mean, we really do. And it's,
I mean,
things no one to talk about. Yeah,
I think people don't realize, because even the lowest of us here in this country have a pretty high standard of living, you know, globally. If you look at it globally, I mean, we've got hot and cold running water in our house. You
yes.
know, our sewage gets taken far away from where we're set. You know, and there's 57 kinds of Twinkies to eat. So we have this perception of having a pretty high standard of living, but
Twinkie is not my idea of high standard. But anyway. Digress.
We also have no conception of what $1 billion is. So when we talk about income disparity, and most of us are really, you know, the vast majority of us in this country are within, you know, $60,000 of each other, right? I
mm-hmm.
mean, the vast majority of us aren't that far apart.
Right.
But that's not where the income disparity is. The income disparity is between the very top, the billions, the numbers that we can't even conceive of. And
right.
that's why in this country we actually have the greatest wage disparity of any place in the world. You know, even though I heard that in South Africa right now, your average white person makes six times what your average black person does. Now, that's startling, you know. That's startling, and that's a huge income disparity. But it pales in comparison to the income disparity that we actually have here.
Well, when CEO can make $20,000 in an hour, which is something that you would like to have a disparity.
Right.
Huh. Okay.
Right. I mean, we can't conceive of $20,000 in an hour.
No, please.
We can't even acknowledge that. You know, if you tell someone this guy makes $20,000 an hour, they look at you like you're crazy. No, he can't make that. Nobody does.
He's worth it, but he makes it from his investments in this and this. Why? But it comes out to him. But you're saying, I'm amazed on South Africa when you're talking about the six times. And that's just based on color.
Yeah. 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 And that's, you know, today. That's not during apartheid. That's right now today. They've got a lot of work still to do there. And
that's just an average. That's across the board. We're not talking about kind of work or hours or anything. Just it averages out to that. That's absolutely horrible.
It's why in such a wealthy nation there are so many people starving.
Mm-hmm. As well, in our nation, which I guess we have so many people who may not be literally starving, but the kids are going to bed hungry, the parents are going to bed hungry because they're giving the food to the kids to try to keep their strength up. I've recently read in a couple different places that we waste 40% of our food.
Oh, I heard it was more.
Well, it may
I
be.
It would be 50%.
Might be. That's across the board. It's whether, you know, like fields, the farmer doesn't have anybody to sell it to, the way it's packaged and traveled and comes to us, and then in our homes,
right,
we buy things and we throw them out. I compost a lot. I mean, basically, it's the peelings and scraps and all this. But I mean, sometimes I've gotten something and I just didn't use enough time, and it goes in the compost also. Well, that's a complete waste because, I mean, it's going back to the ground, not going in the garbage somewhere.
Right. And the vast majority of that food that's counted as being wasted is not even being composted. Being destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, and oftentimes destroyed to keep the price high enough for the farmer, who now is a major corporation and not a farmer, to keep the prices high enough for the profit margin.
Right, and we subsidize.
Price down anymore.
Well, you know, the big corporations, their business, they get subsidies too. And then if we have restaurants and grocery markets and things that have old food, they have to put it out. But I mean, they some places now have to lock the garbage things so that nobody can get into it. And
right.
I remember when that happened in the store I was working at because, you know, we used to, like, feed people out there.
Uh-huh.
It was like we had to lock the garbage dumpsters. I think that is just, I don't even have words for it, to keep food from being used to people who are really hungry from the garbage.
I'm still trying to figure out why every park is not a food forest.
Yeah,
why aren't there fruit trees all over the city?
I think there's some place in our country, Michael. I think it's up in the northwest.
I heard Portland was.
It's Portland. They've got it going. Trees in there. When do we have berry trees everywhere? So if you're out running or working out, come by. You know, you just grab some seeds and keep going. And then the people who really don't have any, you know, they could live well. And
yeah, I mean, I would even accept the use of small amounts of pesticides to maintain the health of those trees and so forth, if that's what it took to allow that to happen.
I
know how to wash off my fruit.
You know? Sure, but it's not always on the outside. It's in the inside. Also, I think if you're actually growing them right and your water system, everything is good, you won't need that. A lot of that, you know, you just have certain kinds of bugs and things that will come and take care of things you don't want. But could you imagine, not community gardens, I am so community gardens. I just think it's wonderful places that are doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Although I was thinking more in terms of, like, if this food were all allowed to grow wild, you know, in which case, It might need some maintenance from the state, you know.
I don't really know. Because I guess if you plant it and get it going, if you get a good solid system, I would think with plenty of water, I don't know.
We can't forget incidents like the blight there in Ireland,
yeah.
You know, that caused the potato famine. I mean,
well, a lot of these things, though, you know what? If you're growing up wild, you're going to run into diversity. And in those towns where years ago they had like the elm disease or other kinds of tree disease, usually it's because there's a lot of one thing there. And natural, I don't want to say enemies, but what would keep that disease away has been down or take. You know, sometimes like nature has a good way of balancing if we really let it grow wild.
Right. Right.
So,
and see, that's what I would like. That's the world I envision living in.
I mean,
there literally is no excuse for starving to death other than you chose not to eat.
Right.
You know?
Right. I mean, it's your choice. And if you make that choice, they're not going to be able to force feed you, speaking of Guantanamo. There's something really horrible about force feeding people. And I understand they're doing it because they don't want to say, well, you know, they died down here in our care. But
I can understand in some cases, like if it's a real medical issue, like bulimia or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And if the person agrees, though, because, I mean, we still have some kind of say over our body. But I know what you're saying, but just to force feed people when they went a fast protesting something, and they were doing some of that in fasting too. Some of the
I had a friend who his thyroid went bad, and he literally lost his mind. Right now, in the state that he was in, he refused all medical treatment. Right. Now, he's alive today because someone said, no, we're going to treat you. You don't have a choice.
Yeah.
And he's very glad that they did, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, that would be different. But I'm saying when people are chosen, like during a fast in a prison or something, and then they're forced, and because it's a horrible process anyway, but they're with them because they're prisoners. So they're just going to stick this down. You know, it's a very painful.
It is a horrible thing. And, I'm not sure. I'm not really sure what the answer is there. In the case of Guantanamo, it should be to let most of those guys go. I mean, most of them don't even have any charges against them. and they've never been tried in a court.
I guess he'd been charged, whatever. He was found not to have anything to do with anything. He's still there. And I always go back to this young boy from Canada. He was, I think, 15 when they put him in. He's missed his whole young adulthood. And there was no excuse for that.
Right. He was like 17 or something?
Yeah.
Even younger. Yeah.
I think he was younger, but yeah.
But
you know,
so what about in the case of, let's say, a sexual offender's prison where all the pedophiles decide that they want to be set free and they decide not to eat until they're set free? Should we just let them die in their prison cell, or?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. I don't know.
And I don't either, because I don't want them free. You
right,
know,
right.
I don't want them to die. So
yeah.
I don't know what the answers are in some of these cases.
Right,
but in Guantanamo, the answer is pretty clear.
Yeah, exactly. You know? But the one that you brought up, that's one of those things, it's like, okay, something to think about, because there's nothing that clear about it. Michael, we just have a few minutes, as we always just talk. So,
yeah.
So what would you like to leave us with tonight?
Well, again, I think I keep coming back to the notion that we need to globally unite around some ideas and ideas of very basic civil rights, like the right to food that's affordable and healthy, the right to health care that's if you're sick you get treated, you know, the right to an education, the right to a job that pays good money. Good enough money to survive, you know, or if there are no jobs, at least enough money to survive, you know.
Right, a guaranteed
the right
income.
To a home that's safe and secure, you know. And I really think that the only way we're going to have these things in any place is if we have them every place. And the only way we're going to have them every place is if we turn our back on organizations, but unite. Does that make any sense?
Yes, yeah. Because I think that people get too wrapped up in organizations. They get to the point where they aren't looking at any other organizations or any of the other big issues. They get very focused on their own issues.
Right, it becomes a brand.
Yes, yes.
And you know, then it has rules that you have to follow. You know, who can talk to the press, who can't talk to the press. I always ignored all of those rules. I'm me, you know.
Well,
I'm an individual
many rules are made to be broken. I mean, they should be broken. So, you know, we have certain things. We have speed limits. We have certain laws that rules that really be followed, given credit. But Michael, thank you so much. We can read more and find out more about you at an American Alarm Clock on Facebook and then at americanalarmclock.blogspot.com. So thank you very much, Michael Custer, and look forward to having you back.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.